Hi, this is Dave Pryor. Welcome to Leading Agile's Sound Notes. So this is a podcast that we put together with the coaches and the folks that work at Leading Agile who are out there in the field working with people who are doing this stuff every day. So what we're trying to do is to bring back some of the knowledge that we share and sometimes some of the questions and different things we experience that we're struggling with, so that if you get a chance to listen in, maybe it'll give you some ideas and maybe you can help us out too. Today, Tim Wise has taken a break from coaching, and we're going to talk about DevOps. So, Tim, thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, no problem, Dave.
So, before we start with our topic, can you give the folks who may not know who you are a little bit of the background on you, like how you became a coach, why you do this stuff?
Oh, sure. Yeah, so the reason I became a coach, I guess I was helping out a variety of organizations. I came up in the development world, started helping out with both software development and management, coaching management, then helping out product organizations and really helping them out, figuring out MVP, and then started structuring larger engagements and really restructuring organizations around value flow and how they produce value. So I've been at it a while. I really enjoy helping teams get better. I enjoy helping organizations get better and put value out onto the marketplace quickly.
Cool. All right. And towards that end of helping people get better, so we're going to talk about DevOps today and something that Tim's been focusing on. So before, Tim, before we get into this topic, because we're sort of assuming people have a basic understanding of DevOps or a strong passion about it. If somebody's brand new to it and they're curious anyway, could you summarize briefly what DevOps is?
Yeah, so DevOps for me is something that helps. It's a combination of development and operations, so that's hence the term DevOps. My one sentence term for that would be like something that you do in a development sense that helps operational time or efficiency get better.
Okay. So they're going to be looking at things like cycle time and finding out different ways to reduce waste and things like that.
Right. And, it may be operationalizing something on the front side. So putting in new user accounts when employees come in, or it may be how to release a product to the market.
Okay, cool. And so, what we're going to talk about today assumes that an organization has gone through some of the basic steps of getting their heads around Agile and how to work well together, correct?
Right, yes.
So do you want to talk about the different types of organizations that you would recommend or that you're focusing on right now, or kind of give a little bit of a lead into this?
Sure. So the types of organizations I'm working with currently are product development organizations. I've worked a lot in the past with like service type of organizations as well. But the one that I specifically wanted to talk about today was with product development and some things I'm seeing and other coaches are seeing out in the product development world. So this is going to be pretty specific to that topic overall. That's what we're here.
All right. So if we talk about an organization that wants to get involved with DevOps, I mean, you're focusing on specific types of organizations. And as you've explained to me, sort of getting ready for this, there's a specific point in time that you're kind of focusing on. So people could pick up DevOps at any point, but can you kind of explain the types of organizations that you're working with mostly in relationship to this and the points at which you're really focusing on creating leverage points that would help people take on DevOps or help them get a lot of benefit from it?
Sure. And I'm specifically working with product development organizations right now. I've worked with a lot of service organizations in the past, but the one that I'm specifically working with right now is more product development. And that's also what a couple of other coaches are working on as well that I've queried about this topic. Specifically what I'm trying to impart today is how to create a pull from an organizational perspective for DevOps to help us decrease things like cycle time, to help us get our operations in order and in check, how to create an actual pull mechanism from the organization to care about this stuff.
So let's talk about the pull thing for a second, because you can't just say, like, go do DevOps. It's going to require possibly some investment on the company's part, definitely some effort in getting people set up in a way that they can pay attention to this stuff, and then all the learning that comes out of it, right?
Right. And I guess some people do actually go out and just do DevOps. That certainly was the case at one of our clients that when I tested another coach out that and just said, hey, what are you guys doing? And what was the state of the organization when we got there? Then a lot of them were doing just DevOps. So, but they remained without a purpose. So they were just
doing it to do it.
Yeah, well, not just doing it to do it, but they'd heard about it. It is a natural system from a technology standpoint. There are natural things that you flow into. The idea of virtualization and how we release things, it's something that we've always worked on.
Okay.
So it's not that it's an unnatural thing to do. Mine is specifically what I'm thinking around is specifically how to create a system that creates a definitive need for this stuff and creates a purpose of being that's really clear to the entire organization.
Okay. So are there things that have to be in place before you can sort of go to work on this or that you would recommend?
Right. Well,
you've kind of found your way through.
Yeah. And generally when we come into organizations, they're in trouble, right? So they're trying to find ways to get to a predictable state and generally have a lot of things that they're working on at one point in time. So after we move them past that, this is really, the jumping off point for me. So if I've got an organization that's to largely can make and meet commitments and that they are now trimming down their minimum viable product and they're only doing the things that are necessary, then we've already installed things like Kanban boards and we've looked at their value flow. And we're starting to assess their cycle time as a whole. So this really creates something that is a valuable point to look at. It's not a point in time, but it's a trend that says, okay, well, we can develop things. We can develop features in roughly 2 to 6 weeks. It can sit in a backlog for 2 weeks, and then it'll be developed in an additional 2 or 4 weeks. But then we have this other time that's out here before we can make money off of it, before we can learn from our customer base. And that's what I find value in visualizing then to create a very powerful pull mechanism for organizations. That's the piece that at one client we have 4 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks for actually sitting in a backlog and getting a feature out. But then there's another 6 weeks waiting on the backside of that. That's just chewing up time. And is waste for them.
Okay, so I guess one thing that I want to go back to is what you said about these steps about having the ability to be making and meeting commitments to start to understand some basics about your MVP, to be using Kanban boards or something like that. I mean, you're talking about people who have developed a sort of a maturity about their agile approach that is beyond basic.
Right, right.
So if we have potential customers listening, if they think they're ready, they should call you.
Right. Yeah. They may indeed not be ready for what I'm talking about anyway.
So right.
This is not the basic maturity of an organization to do the basic things. So they need to be an organization that can make and meet commitments, and one that is starting to focus on other things.
And just to clarify the problem, so if I'm working in a product organization and we've got some basic agile stuff going on and it seems like it's fairly stable and I want to try to find a way to tune things up even further. I mean, that's what you're really employing DevOps for here. It's after you've got the basics down, after the training wheels are off the bike, how do we learn how to ride a bike that doesn't have regular brakes?
Right. So instead of like a team level approach, this is really looking at the system at hand and saying, how can we provide continuous improvement of a system? Instead of looking at it from a team perspective, you would say, what's the next thing I need to do to improve my system? And in large part, so we've got it to a predictable state. We can make and meet commitments. We've got some level of flow, whatever that means to the organization. And we've got things flowing across the Kanban board. Now, how do we look operationally and what are the things that we need to do to reduce our cycle time to get things out to the market quicker? What does that mean to the company overall? Kind of what's the value of it to the company?
So I want to ask you a question about that. Is it possible that a company could have a longer cycle time? Like you mentioned, you've got this 6 weeks on the back end. Could you find or come to the decision that, yeah, that's wasteful time, but it's wasteful time that for one reason or another, we're going to let that be? Like, we think that makes sense to have that waste there.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's some, I mean, I'm actually just racking my brain now that you asked that question. It's a good one of what's the situation where that time might be necessary or needed. In general, it's a sign of if I always look at it as waste and something that I need to get rid of, it's there for a reason overall. So you need to analyze the reason of why it's there. In general, I find that it's one of control and quality. So the next step that you might look to do is to start to remove, if we need to remove some of that from the system, how do we maintain our quality perspective on the system? So we're not just reducing cycle time for a poor reason, but we're actually maintaining system quality along the way. So what that looks like to me is if we have our Kanban board and we're going to release to market, I don't want to see a lot of things flow backwards on the Kanban board and go back up the value chain. I want to ensure that once we say that it's releasable, that we can indeed release it. So that might look like identifying some components and capabilities and systems that we can decouple, that we can then wrap in some automated testing that we can now know, okay, that thing's going to move across, and we can basically establish confidence in the system that once we say it's ready, that it's indeed ready, and it's not going to come back to haunt us and come back up the chain and stop a release from happening. So that's one case, I guess, and it's a pretty straightforward first step is how do we ensure high quality in the thing that we're producing? In a lot of organizations, that purely looks like we've got a lot of code that's integrated together. We've got a lot of people in that code. How do we reduce either the people that are in there at any one point in time, or decouple the system such that it can be broken down into a smaller component? And then how do we ensure that we are producing quality
code? So I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I'm going to say, but Tim, Consultant Tim, you don't understand. My company's different. We're very complex. We don't have the ability to work that way.
Right. So I think every company views themselves that way. Right?
Sorry.
So
yeah. That's
the real answer. To
a little
that.
Tongue in cheek, I guess.
However, going back in part of my background, I have healthcare and finance. Now, those two are not the background that I really wanted at the end of the day. It's not the most, sexiest thing on the market today. But nevertheless, healthcare and finance is when you mess with lives and money, that kind of puts it into perspective for you. So this is absolutely something that when you're in a monetary system that – how do you deal with that? This is something that's practiced in some of our larger clients that may be a payment gateway type of client where they have to ensure quality in their systems. That's something that people would say, well, we're different. We're unique. We have to work with the banks of the world and the Visas and the MasterCards of the world. How would we ever produce something that's ensured quality? And they need to identify those boundaries, and they need to put some automated testing in place. So it's hard work. I don't want to minimize that.
So the automated testing is a big deal. I mean, that's something that if you don't have that in place, you're going to need to get – if you really want this stuff to work, you're going to need to have that. You're going to need to make the investment.
That's right. And there is a systematic way that you can start to make that investment so you don't have to take it all up front. But you can start to break away pieces of the organization into capabilities or systems or components and start to define them. Okay, this is the area that we're focusing in on. This is the area that we're decoupling. This is the one that we're starting to establish a system of quality over. Now that we've got that one, then we can proceed to the next one. And once they are broken away, and once we have some type of quality perspective on it, then they can be a locally autonomous group. And once they have local autonomy, then they can begin to release on their own and switch from this idea of a release train into more of a release pipeline type of methodology.
All right, so before we talk about release trains, which we're going to talk about now that you've said those words, I want to ask you a question about what this does to an organization. So, because to me, it almost sounds like the organization that's employing this, especially at the stage at which they're starting to do it, they're kind of becoming the students of their own practices with this meta-level look at how can we get better, how can we get faster.
Yeah, they really are, you know, and when we go in, so there is some truth to every organization is a bit unique. They're dealing with their circumstances, their things that they've invented for the last, you know, however many years.
Their own problems that they've
created.
There's
definitely some uniqueness to each and every organization with that respect. So they have to systematically untangle that a bit.
Yeah.
And start to break away, and it is hard. It is a challenge, but that's something that given that uniqueness, that they can start to define it themselves and start to move forward themselves. But remember, this is not an agile basic organization. This is one that's already learned a little something about themselves.
That already sees some value in that.
Right.
That
and effort. Now, from a product perspective, you're saying, well, what are the things that we need to do? I want to get things out to market. My cost of delaying this is X amount. So therefore, I'm losing money if we don't reduce our cycle time to this amount.
And so that's what drives that conversation then. You point out how much money you're losing.
It's one of the things that drives that conversation. So you can have cost of delay type of conversations that puts a monetary value on the cycle time itself. You can also establish that the organization is really, really cares about innovation and learning. So have they found is that their level of the organization with some teams, with some large programs, you might find that they haven't achieved product market fit. And indeed, that's the case with one of my programs at a current client. They haven't achieved product market fit. So they're all about learning and kind of the lean startup type of methodology of how do I, you know, what's the hypothesis? What am I trying to disprove? Let's put it out onto the marketplace and learn from it. Do a bunch of A/B testing. Let's do multiple A/B tests.
Well, so hold on, because we've talked about Agile and we've talked about DevOps, and now you're bringing Lean Startup into it.
Sure.
For somebody who's that may seem kind of overwhelming, and we haven't even talked about your release train comment yet. So
right.
For somebody who's, I mean, this seems like a lot of stuff. Is it? I guess as you work through one, does it become natural that you start to look at the next?
Well, I'll put it's actually more the problem that they're trying to solve. So what is that problem? So in this particular context, it was the problem they're trying to solve is they don't have product market fit, or they're trying to learn about their market rapidly.
Okay. All right.
In that case, that 6-week window becomes taxing on them, and they can't learn quick enough about their product. So that also puts a pull on the system of, hey, we need to speed up. Why are we spending this amount of time on releases? How can we get better? So this is a system that's already looking at how do we improve ourselves and how do we continuously improve. So at this point, it's really starting to ask questions of itself, as you mentioned before. I think that's a great way to look at it, Dave, is this is a system that's reflecting on itself already and is trying to get better. So from that angle, they're looking at a variety of things. In one sense, it's how do we learn faster? And in another sense, it's what's the cost of delay and how much money am I losing? So those are probably...
I think this is a critical thing for people to understand. So DevOps is a set of practices that will help you map out and understand your workflow, identify points of waste, and hopefully reduce those points of waste. So on one hand, it's a tactical thing. But on the other hand, what we're talking about now is it's like a new set of glasses that helps you see things in a different way.
Right.
And helps you gain clarity on decisions or choices you have to make. Like if our goal is to get to this, you know, A-B testing every single day lean startup thing, we need a way to get faster feedback. Oh, and DevOps might be a way to help us see what we need to change to get to that point.
Right. And it's absolutely, you know, this is the thing that we need to do because here is the bottleneck in our system. Here's the time that we can't change. And here's the time that we can. So the thing that we can change with in my current environment would be, we can affect the time it takes for our release to go out the door. So what are the things that we need to do to make that happen?
Yeah.
So part of the problem, you wanted to go back to release trains, is
yes.
Part of the problem is that they're currently systematically putting their code together and then hopping on a release train all at once, all together at the same time.
So hold on, before you go any further with this, do we have to assume that if they're having release trains that they're doing safe?
No. So this is a concept that they came up with on their release side of their house, because honestly, I wasn't looking at that just yet. I know that it's coming. I know it's something that they're going to want to pay attention to. So I'm, for the meantime, I'm okay with them forming a release train. They've typically had a gated release cycle before. So this is by and large really still much of the same, with now more commitment up front and people agreeing on the dependencies that they have. And
saying, so can you explain what if people aren't familiar with SAFe, can you explain what a release train is?
So sure. This is basically a time where people are getting together and saying, these are the features that are going to be in our release. Here's how they map out. Here's all the dependencies between them. And basically agreeing on the structure of the release as it goes. But it's basically an admitting that you have some dependencies and
across the organization, across different teams, across.
Yeah, so this could be across a lot of different teams. So this in the current system at play, there's 30 teams that I'm talking about at the moment. So and then in other systems, it could be more like 100 teams or whatever your flavor is. So when we're talking about a big problem with dependencies, this is a big, big problem with dependencies. It's not
well, and so they're getting together at the beginning of a release and kind of mapping out and scheduling, a la traditional project management, how they're going to work through this stuff and get it all ready to go out the door.
Yep, and here are the releases that we're going to do. Feel free to hop on one of these trains, and if we have dependencies, we need to work them out between the groups and how it plays out. Now, that's I don't believe in the everyone gets in the same room version of the release train, and some people may not like that portion of the show, but that's just not how I see it play out very, very much. So
how what do you recommend?
Well, I recommend going to a release pipeline point of view rather than a release train, where a release pipeline would just be that it's something that's available. Once you put it on the pipeline, it's going out the door, and that it's basically turning that admitting it's a dependency into where we're not going to have dependencies, and it's going to go out the door.
You want honesty and transparency.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's more about
balderdash.
Establishing those boundaries. And really, once we commit, we're not waiting on other people to see if we have quality in our system. So in a release train, if someone fails, we all fail, right? So in a release pipeline, if someone fails, then they can take care of that. It's not accepted into the pipeline.
All right, so let me ask about this. This is one thing that I do see happen a lot. Is when you've got a mixed organization, where you've got waterfall and agile, every time I see that, they try to plan out these coordination points or you know, however they're going to get stuff out the door. The agile teams are always standing around looking at their watches going, where the hell are those waterfall guys? So if that happens in this model, in this pipeline model, does that mean that the agile teams can continue to work forward and the waterfall teams can continue to finish whatever they thought they were going to have finished earlier?
Yeah, I love that. I love that, Dave. So
sorry.
For a period of time, it's really important that the teams have control over whatever it is that they're touching. So that's where local autonomy comes into play. So if we haven't removed that impediment of saying whoever's working on this piece of the system has control over it, if we haven't removed that, then there's really not a good clear way to say, well, this team has code ownership over it. They have high confidence in that this is going to work. So there's ways to get in and around it. I find that for me, I like for them to be a self-contained system where they don't have other people that are mixing in with them. And so there's probably a tons of nuances around that. Probably.
So you're saying that the agile teams just do their bit, the waterfall teams just do their bit. They're separate but equal.
Yeah, and I think the implication that people would make is that, well, they can't be separate. And that's kind of like one of those arguments that says, well, we're different, right?
But there's a case that can be made on the other side. I mean, Gartner's got the whole, we have to have Waterfall and IT and Agile existing side by side.
Sure. And so, my current client does the same thing. So, with them existing side by side, I'm perfectly fine with that as long as we have ownership of the thing, is ownership of our outcome. So it's the ability to affect our outcome. Okay. Otherwise, our Agile teams are not empowered the way that they should be. So when I take a look at a waterfall system and an Agile system belonging to the same ecosystem, then that's fine. We just have to make sure that we maintain code ownership of whatever is in the release for that period of time for those sets of teams. So it's really not accepting the dependency of, okay, I'm dependent on this waterfall system to do something, or I'm dependent on them to release, or they're dependent on me, is saying I have ownership of my outcome, and I really want to maintain that ownership and that autonomy as a system. I need to maintain that level of quality and understanding so that I have the privilege of doing that release pipeline.
Okay. So can you kind of summarize the steps? Like if somebody is at the point where they're ready to work on this and they feel like they need some way of ramping up their ability to continue to get better, what kind of steps do they have to go through after they've hit those basic things of predictability and a, you know, fairly decent way of working out their MVP and stuff like that?
So the basic things to hit their MVP would be to align their organization, you know, from a structure perspective. How do we get value out of their organization in a predictable way? So that's a hard conversation to have, and it's hard to do. So that's something that, you know, I'd recommend that you get help on. But if you're trying it, you really need to organize it around value flow yourself, and really engaging both product and development, product and IT side by side as a true product development organization. And that's to ensure, you know, that everyone is on the same page. And I guarantee after you get predictability and you start working on trimming down things from an MVP standpoint, that the next question that comes out will be, how do we make this system even faster? How do we ramp it up? Yeah. How do we go faster?
Squeeze more out of the rock. Yeah. Yes.
That's it. You know, it is the way of the world today. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, where do you go to get that information? It's generally around cycle time. And it's going to be, how do we decrease cycle time? How do we decrease time to market? How do we speed up our learning if we're in an innovation cycle?
Yeah.
So with those things, you can start to ask the questions of, how do you do that? That's the why. So we're starting with the why, right? And then you can figure out how you're going to do it after that.
Okay. So if people are still listening at this point, we have to assume that they're interested in this topic and they want to find out more about it. You've already given a presentation on this. If people want to get in touch with you and they want to dig into this a little bit deeper, just kick some ideas around, what's the best way for them to track you down? Is it just to go onto Leading Agile site? Do you have another way you want them to reach you?
Yeah, so I work with, Leading Agile site. You can feel free to email me. It's tim@leadingagile.com. I'm all over LinkedIn, and I run a little small blog called wiseagile.com, wiseagile.com.
Okay.
But that's, and come check out.
And the Twitter.
Yeah, so Twitter, Twitter is one way to get in touch with me. It's probably not the most reliable way to get in touch with me, but it's Tim S. Wise on Twitter. Okay. And I'll be speaking at the Agile Development Conference East in Orlando in November.
November 8th to 13th.
The 8th through the 13th, and I'll be speaking on different product patterns of product ownership and product management. So that should be an interesting talk there as well.
Cool. All right, man. Thanks a lot for taking time for this today. This was a cool interview. And if you're listening, I hope you enjoyed it. This was sort of a little headier topic, so hopefully it was valuable. And if you were interested in it, please let us know.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dave, and happy early birthday.
Thanks, man.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
See you.